Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. The mortality rate for heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and breast cancer has decreased among North Carolina women in recent years, but a new report from officials at the North Carolina Department of Administration finds that our state still ranks in the middle or at the bottom nationally on a series of health and wellness indicators. Serious health disparities among women by race and ethnicity also persist. Recently, I sat down for an extended interview with State Department of Administration Secretary Michelle Sanders and North Carolina Council for Women and Youth Involvement Director Mary Williams Stover to discuss the report, its findings, and some of the implications it contains for state policy. Well, this morning on News and Views, we're delighted to be joined by the Secretary of Administration, Michelle Sanders, and the head of the North Carolina Council for Women and Youth Involvement, Mary Williams Stover. Welcome to News and Views, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you all have a new report out. First of all, before we get to that, let's talk about a little bit about the Council for Women and Youth Involvement and its placement in the Department of Administration. What's the purpose of this council? What's the kind of work that you all do? Mary?
The North Carolina Council for Women is one of several advocacy agencies within the Department of Administration. And we are unique in that our focus is on identifying issues and needs of women and youth mm-hmm. across the state and elevating awareness about those issues for decision makers and policymakers and individuals who can make change happen, really uplifting the right. issues at the state level.
And in the past, y'all have done reports on a variety of issues. Last year, there was a report which explored women's employment and earnings and sort of the economic status of women in our state.
That's correct. Part of identifying and elevating the issues and needs of the state is making sure you have the data and the information. And so the Council for Women Advisory Board over the past several years has taken the approach of working with a leading organization, IWPR, Institute for Women's Policy Research, okay. and publishing a series of status of women reports. The last report was released in 2013. And so this report that was issued last year is part of our new series to provide that same information and a comparison.
And Secretary Sanders, you have an amazingly varied job. And as the Secretary of Administration, you oversee a wide array of agencies and projects and missions. But this one obviously is an important one to you.
Yes, this is important to me. It's important to me because it has such an impact on the communities and families and the lives of all of our residents of this state. Mm-hmm. And I care deeply about the state and about the well-being of all residents. I know it matters to me before my family yeah. as well as for myself. So it is critically important to the state.
So let's dive into this new report that y'all have just put out. Let's spend some time on some of the key findings. The official title of the report is the 2019 Status of Women in North Carolina Health and Wellness Report, right?
Yes. Right.
Are there some overall findings? In general, looks like North Carolina still has a lot of work ahead of it.
Yes, North Carolina has a lot of work ahead of us. There are areas where we've improved, but there are also a significant number of areas where North Carolina is lagging behind. Before I move on, it is called the Status of Women Report,
mm-hmm. okay.
but I should note that this is not just a women's issue. Improving the health and well-being of women, it actually strengthens our state's economy. It strengthens the families and communities of the state. It ensures that we have a healthy workforce and that we are helping those areas, especially those economically distressed areas in rural North Carolina, which happens to be about 80% of our state.
Yeah.
So the key data that's in the report not only shows us where we've made improvements, but shows us where we have gaps. North Carolina has 57% of its workforce that are women.
And that's one of the highest in the country, right? Traditionally, North Carolina's had more women in the workforce than just about any other state.
Yes. The report tells us that among 50 states and D.C., the District of Columbia, North Carolina is in the middle to bottom on its health indicators mm-hmm. and wellness. Mm. Heart disease is our best ranking, and we rank 27th of 51.
Yeah.
And the worst being AIDS diagnosis.
Really?
Where we rank 44th.
Wow.
And I have to say, in reading the report, that was a bit shocking to me. and saddening to me. So those are just some high-level data points that indicate that surely we have a lot of work to do, and I believe that the state can do better and is better.
But I was struck by how we rank 11th highest in infant mortality and 9th highest in stroke mortality amongst women, and it's even worse when you get to rural counties. Do we have an indication of why that's the case? What are some of the contributing factors, Mary, to that situation?
Well, access to health care is one of the issues, but mm-hmm. also helping women to and providers to understand the various differences that impact women. Our previous report on employment and earnings shows that there is a connection between where you live and your ability to not only access employment, but also your ability to access health care mm-hmm. and health services. And so that's part of the issue, is that women and families need more information. Mm-hmm. They also need greater access to services.
For folks who live comfortable lives in middle-class, urban, suburban communities, it must be hard to even wrap your arms around it in the year 2019. But there are literally thousands upon thousands of people in our state who live where there's just no doctor around. There's nobody around providing basic health information that so many of the rest of us take for granted. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a very fair assessment. You know, I am from rural North Carolina, Belhaven, North Carolina, a small town on the eastern part of the state that has been in the news for the closure of a hospital, Pungo District Hospital, which I was born in. So I see when I go home and I hear daily from my mother the devastating impact of the lack of access to, in that town, hospitals and quality access to health care when there are so many chronic diseases. There's also poverty. There's also the lack of transportation. And as Mary mentioned, the need for more awareness and education on things from diet to exercise to what these illnesses are. This report actually underscores Governor Cooper's leadership and push for Medicaid expansion and closure of the insurance gap. If we close the insurance gap and Medicaid expansion, those phone calls that I get where I hear in the neighborhood that Miss X has passed and Mr. X has passed from a stroke, from a heart attack, I believe and I am confident that many of those lives would have been saved. Not only is the insurance gap devastating for the health and well-being, but it's devastating for the trauma and the impact that is tearing our communities apart. Not only for, you know, with death, but opioid epidemic sure. that is going on in communities. So with 500,000 residents in North Carolina who don't have access to health insurance, it's really past time that we do something. More babies will be able to live to see their first birthday. North Carolina has a high ranking for infant mortality. Fewer people will have those repeated hospitalizations and the severity of those hospitalizations. The expansion will have an economic impact, creating jobs not only in the healthcare industry, but it will have a multiplicity effect where we'll have job creations in entertainment, construction. And so the list goes on and on for the reason to close the insurance gap. And the one way before us now and the best way is through Medicaid expansion. And, you know, another saddening data point mm-hmm. with Medicaid expansion is that of those 500,000 without health care, 30,000 to 40,000 are veterans. These are people who fought for our freedom, our rights, and sacrificed their lives and families for this country and the state. And it's sad to hear and see and witness those 30,000 to 40,000 veterans out there without that. So insurance gap closure and closing that gap is the number one way that we believe to improve the status of women and the well-being in North Carolina, as well as to improve the status for all citizens in the state.
Seems like an obvious no-brainer, and I want to ask you more about some of the solutions shortly. One last point I wanted to ask about with respect to the findings is the disparity not only between rural and urban, but between people of color. Black women in North Carolina more than 3 times higher than the rate of Hispanic women when it comes to heart disease. Area after area where people of color are even more at risk, struggling more and falling further behind. I take it that's a persistent problem in the findings that y'all are encountering.
That is a persistent problem. This report outlines county by county as well as the demographics. And so the wide disparity of North Carolina's women in that mortality space for race and ethnicity is there. Heart disease, some of the chronic illnesses that we see, the rate of breast cancer mortality that is more than 3 times higher for Black women. And so these types of data points and the information that we're seeing leads me to believe that there are also cultural barriers and cultural points within each group or demographic that we also have to address and understand and ask ourselves why and continue to seek those whys and put forward solutions, which means that we need to be courageous and we also need to be accepting of what that information may be or what it is. And as we say, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And address those health disparities. We can see health care disparities. They are very prominent, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And as an African-American and a Black woman who has been enduring the aging parents and their health issues, I know firsthand that those disparities can and do have an impact on the health and well-being of people. So I think there's a lot of social determinants there that play into that data.
We're talking with North Carolina Department of Administration Secretary Michelle Sanders and Mary Williams Stover, who's head of the North Carolina Council for Women and Youth Involvement, about their new report on the health and wellness of women in North Carolina. Let's talk a little bit about some of the recommendations. Obviously, you've mentioned, Secretary Sanders, that the big overwhelming need in the state is to expand Medicaid, that if we did that, it would provide for so many solutions and so many benefits to so many people. But let's talk a little bit about some of the more specific recommendations that are in the report about how we're going to increase women's access to health care and preventative services, including screening and testing to promote early detection of various illnesses and disease. Is it all a function of Medicaid, or are there other things we can be doing to help in that area?
The majority of it is a function of ensuring that we have access mm-hmm. to health care.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the primary and overarching recommendation that I believe will have the most immediate and significant impact.
Mm-hmm.
There are other recommendations which Mary and I will highlight. One is investing in our youth and investing in our young people. And so whether that's in the education space or given opportunities that such as we do with our youth involvement and making them aware of various aspects of health and the health determinants. But one policy recommendation is to invest in our youth today.
There's so many different ways we could invest in our youth, so many ways in which we underinvest in our youth today, whether it comes from our schools to our public health programs. Are there any specific
right.
things that really deserve to be lifted up in this conversation?
Increasing funding for school counselors.
Uh-huh.
That's part of what the requirements are.
Mm-hmm.
More social workers and more nurses who can help create healthier school climates where students come to them and they have someone to talk to about these issues. One of the findings of the report is an increase in sexually transmitted infections.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that students and young people being able to, number one, be aware of these infections and then having someone to talk to confidentially can help them to minimize long-term negative impact. So hiring more individuals who can provide information about healthy behaviors, healthy relationships, and then also looking at funding for survivors of interpersonal violence and sexual assault. We know 1 in 3 North Carolina women has experienced sexual assault or interpersonal violence, and the rates are much higher for women of color. And so funding at the state level has remained stagnant for the past 10 plus years. How do we increase resources for those agencies so that they can provide more services? They're doing a great job right now with the resources they have, but increasing their ability to, again, educate, build awareness, and then provide support for individuals who do present for help.
Yeah, I mean, we know for a fact in the schools that we have a lot fewer counselors and school nurses and psychologists than we had a decade ago, which is sort of a remarkable fact to contemplate. We actually have fewer teachers and teacher assistants too, but the numbers in terms of how many individual students we ask our counselors to help is just, it's absurd that these people can even really even keep track of all the students, much less provide services in many instances. So that seems like an obvious one. Unfortunately, the General Assembly has yet to see fit to go in that direction.
Yeah, I mentioned that how this report underscores Governor Cooper's leadership for Medicaid expansion, but it also underscores another priority of his, which is public education. And so within that public education space and within this budget, he has put forward funding for additional school counselors and healthcare assistance, if you will, within our school system. And that's not only for the topics that we're talking about today, but for other things that also connect to the well-being of women, young girls, and young boys in school. And that is mental health, which is a huge challenge and unfortunate illness to deal with. And so having those outlets in the school, having that toolbox with those counselors within that and others is very important. So again, within this budget, which we're in conversations and right. in the process
as
of today,
yes,
as timing of this, the governor has put forward funding and aspects that will support the disheartening findings that are in the Status on Women report, which, of course, again, is not just a women's issue, right. but everyone's issue. The other policy recommendation that we have is for economic security.
There's some very specific things that could be done to make some real dents in that problem.
Yes. And so one of those things would be to increase the minimum wage mm-hmm. to at least $15. And I say at least because nowadays I think it's kind of challenging to have basic necessities.
Living wage is actually even higher than that,
yes.
true living wage.
Yeah, so at least $15 would be a help. Family and medical leave, having paid parental leave, mm-hmm. those types of attributes really help in the workplace and in an organization. Most recently, we are pleased within state government, within the executive branch, Governor Cooper just put forward an executive order for paid parental leave. As a mother of twins, I know how challenging it is to work and try to handle family and drop off twins and pick up and go here and there. It's like a crazy person.
Right.
But it's also challenging, but yet it is comforting and a little bit of reassurance there when you know that you can take that time for an adoption or for your children to have that bonding and connection and to help and not have to worry about whether or not you're going to have a job to go back to because there's not an allowance for that. So within state government, the executive branch and the state agencies are excited for this and excited that for the impact that it'll have on our employees, hopefully retaining and attracting employees into state government.
It's an important new report that everybody ought to be aware of. Where do y'all go from here? Y'all are sort of taking this on the road. You're going to be making other presentations around the state. Am I right about that?
That's right. We are taking this on the road. We are headed to, I believe, Vance and Warren County next. We are raising awareness across the state of the importance and the data within the report. We're also making the connections with people so that they understand and know just how this information impacts them and how the policy recommendations can have an impact on their lives. We're also hoping that as we go across the state that we're building coalitions of voices and actions to improve the status of women in North Carolina, to improve the status of families and communities in North Carolina, and to improve the status of our state.
Mm-hmm.
We can do and we can be so much better. Many times people think, well, what can I do? There's nothing I can do about this. There is a lot we can do. We can all lift our voices about this. We can all try to improve our own health, whether that's just walking or trying to get stress relief at times and help others. And we can all vote. We can all register to vote. And I say that and want to pause with that we can all hopefully register to vote and vote. And the reason I say that is because we also need to elect officials who are aligned with us in this fight to improve the status on women, to improve the status of our residents in the state. And so that is powerful. And so one thing that everyone can do is exercise their right to vote for elected officials who believe in quality access and insurance for individuals, who believe in increasing the minimum wage, who believe that women should make the same as their peers in the same job with similar qualifications way beyond 2060. Right. We can elect officials who truly believe in the good things and what's best for the greater North Carolina rather than themselves, and who believe in truly improving the health and well-being of all of our residents, because that is public health, and public health touches us all.
Well, Secretary of Administration Michelle Sanders and Mary Williams Stover, the Director of the Council for Women and Youth Involvement, thank you so much for your service to our state, for leading us in the direction of these intentional solutions, and we hope to talk to you again soon and talk about the success that your report has brought forth.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.